Welcome back to the Hollywood Casino Press Box featuring Frank Cusimano and Martin Kilcoyne on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com.
Everybody here is out of sight, but they don't bark and they don't bite. They keep.
And welcome back. Hollywood Casino Press Box on the all-new 590 The Fan. We are broadcasting live from Worldwide Technology Raceway, site of the Bomarito 500. Go to bomarito.com for more information about the race on August 24th and for more information on how to buy a great car. They sell over 30,000 cars a year, 20 new car locations, 9 pre-owned car locations. Nobody sells cars like Bomarito. Frank Cusimano with Martin Kilcoyne, and we are joined by Mike Claiborne from the Cardinal Broadcast Network. Mike, great to be with you. How are you, sir?
I'm good.
So I kind of believe Mike Schilt yesterday when he talked about how, you know, I think what we were looking for in the media or asking about was, well, are the players deflated because no star players showed up in the locker room yesterday? And he said, you know, we don't need a jolt. And at the time, they'd, you know, sole possession of first place. How do you see that first from that perspective and the locker room that they weren't disappointed and they know they can do this? What's your take?
That's a good question because I was in both locker rooms yesterday and they were completely different. The Cubs had a lot of jump. There was a lot of discussion and excitement about what was going to be happening. And the Cardinals just, you know, we're going through the motions of getting ready for a game. Now, you know, personalities have a lot to do with it. But I'm not sure what else Mike Schilt could say in that situation. He can only worry about the players that he's been given. And he's got to figure out the best way to get the best results out of the players on his roster. If they give him some other players, and he obviously figures that in. But I'm not sure what else he could say, because if he says, I don't know if we can win with this bunch, I mean, then you got a bigger problem on your hands. So, you know, from a manager's standpoint, I think that's the way the game works today. Managers probably more now have to worry about what's given them compared to being part of the decision-making process of what they need.
And, Claves, if you did take a poll, do you have a gut as to what would I think most players would vote, give me somebody, make a move. Don't you think if you polled players anonymously, the higher percentage would say, I want them to do something?
Yeah. No, I think when you look at teams that have won, they've always found a way to add something at this time of the year. You know, everybody probably clubhouse feels that way except the guy that's going to be replaced. He's like another shot at it. But I think that if you look around, the good teams that have won – have always been excited or have looked forward to this day. I mean, I thought it was ironic yesterday. This was Christmas in July, and everybody was waiting for a Christmas gift, and they got a lump of coal.
Yeah, I know the optics on it. No, and people were saying, forget Christmas in July. How about Groundhog's Day? And then to add to it, you had the horrific smell in the building last night. The jokes wrote themselves. You've been doing this a long time. Have you smelled that? In your career, it was almost nauseous down there.
No, I've never. I mean, you know, you can ride, you know, certain parts of Illinois where that happens, but I don't think I've ever. For as long as it was undergoing, that really was more of an issue than anything else. I mean, you know, it's happened before, but I don't think I've ever experienced it that long of a period of time.
So the Cardinals were not going to give up Dylan Carlson or Gorman for 10 starts of a rental. Now the 10 starts go to Michael Wacha. Your confidence level in Wacha, who has had isolated good starts this year, just hasn't been consistent. What do you think?
I don't know. You know, I'd like to give you a better answer, but, you know, Wacha is, you know, a guy that we've all watched really be really good. We've seen the injuries really take something away from him. You know, this year he's just been that one pitch away from being good. But the one pitch that he doesn't make is the one that costs him. So I just don't know. I mean, you know, this whole situation, and you know, we've all been around this team, and I sense frustration not only from Mo and Gersh, but I think the media was – I mean, I saw a bunch of eye rolls yesterday from people like, you got to be kidding me. But this is a bigger issue than yesterday when you look at it, because, you know, they're talking about, well, we don't want to give up our future. Well, you know, when you haven't made postseason for the last 3 years, your future is now. I don't think you can sit and tell anybody that we don't want to mortgage our future, because we've heard that. And I'm trying to figure out what member of the future 3 or 4 years ago has made that significant of an impact, because you still haven't made postseason. You've made trades to help you get there, and that hasn't worked, more or less. So I don't know. I think the urgency is higher now than it's ever been, because I don't know what the future holds anymore. Is Nolan Gorman the answer? Is Dylan Carlson the can't-miss guy? I don't know. I mean, we've heard that about other people. And I think the part of the problem is where you've drafted for so many years toward the tail end or middle of the draft, and it seems like you're moving up further, is something that you're now dealing with, because your development of players isn't coming along as quick as it needs to. But then again, you have to be more patient. There's a reason why that guy was taken in the 19th pick. There's a reason why he was taken later than that. And when you look at Chicago and Milwaukee, Atlanta, Houston, those teams already bit that bullet, where they've been able to do some things because they drafted higher and their players were expected to be better. You know, and we haven't had a top 10 pick. We haven't had a top 5 pick. We haven't taken a guy the first pick overall. And I think it's caught up to him. And you have to go back and look at how you develop players now. And that starts in the minor leagues and what you're doing and what you're teaching and saying, how patient are we going to be with certain players? Because if you rush them up here, you're going to get what you're seeing now. Guys that probably are going to be on the Memphis shuttle, guys that really haven't lived up to the expectation, guys who are going to be stereotyped because, you know, they strike out too much or they can't do this. You know, it's just a combination of things that put us in where we're at today.
Yeah, and their willingness to unload some people, too, just to seemingly unload them, like a Tommy Pham always comes to mind. I even think I would put Jerko in that camp. I think he's got some value, but they seem willing to get rid of pieces, and yet they're lacking. They're missing a lot, but they're willing to give away a number of pieces. And, you know, the Piscotty situation was different. I know he's not tearing it up, but there's been a whole lot of just, especially in the outfield, just turnover after turnover. And that's how many big league teams are good that don't have a consistent outfield lineup that has some thump? You know,
you're right. I agree with you, Martin. You know, we've unloaded some good players, or have players that have gone on elsewhere and had good careers. And, you know, that wasn't always the case. There was a time where the Cardinals, if they let a free agent go, he'd go somewhere and never play as well as he did here in St. Louis. They make a trade, they trade a guy, he'd never go somewhere and play as well as he did in St. Louis. Well, that's not the case.
Yeah. Kent Bottenfield.
I mean, going back and looking at Jerko didn't have a job here, okay? He was out of shape. He had a bad spring. He never caught up, and guys took his job. And I don't know what he's going to do in L.A. I think that was more of a salary dump. You scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. But, you know, I don't know if Jerko was the answer. And, you know, while we lament the fact he's gone, he didn't do anything all year. So, you know, we have those move players that we look back and say, man, I don't, you know, what did we get for him, or you know, why did we do that? The clear up room for who to play, and that process just hasn't been as successful as I think everybody hoped it would be.
Yeah, to go back to the uncertainty of the outfield, I don't think any major league team is in this type of quandary. Is that if you look at next season, who could you definitively say is going to get 500 at bats in the Cardinal outfield?
I agree. I think it's the biggest head-scratcher. And you know, I think you have to ask yourself that about third base as well. I don't know who's going to play third base next year. I don't know if it's Tommy Edman. You know, he came out and was really good early, where he was a spark. But he's kind of leveled off. But he has been good defensively, and that's something that we've missed at third base for the last few years. So I think this organization is more in question for 20 than it is right now, because you don't know who's going to play in the outfield. You don't know who's going to play third base. You have no idea what your pitching staff is going to be like, both bullpen and starter. I think there are more questions going into this offseason and going into the spring than what we have right now as we speak. And I know we're tied for first place at this point, but I think people have more question marks about this season than they do next year as far as what do you really have. And we just don't have – we don't know.
Yeah, that's the added frustration because I think a fan base that's smart can buy in on, hey, you don't want to mortgage the future. But then people sit back and say, well, wait a minute, what is the future? I do have a lot of questions about what we're going to look like in 2020. And I think a couple of years ago, they probably wouldn't have said it publicly, but they knew that Hudson and Flaherty were coming, and they were kind of like, let's just hang in there. Let's get to when these guys are ready. We got all these young arms, and that's when we're really going to make our move. But I don't know that the future is terribly exciting either. And I think that's what the fan base is sort of looking at and saying, yeah, you know, what do you got down? Okay, I'm with you. Let's not mortgage the future, but what do we really have down the pike that's going to excite anybody?
Well, I agree with you, Martin, where Flaherty and Hudson were probably givens where you thought they'd be good. Their youth, their physical ability. You say, okay, and I know while Flaherty hasn't had the best season, you still see promise and hope in a guy who's, 23 years old. And Hudson's been your best pitcher as far as his record's concerned. So we get that. But let's move to page two of that. So you know you're going to have Michaelis back. You're going to have Flaherty and Hudson. You're going to bring Wainwright back. You don't have a fifth starter right now. And I know the Gomber thing was an issue, and obviously Reyes has been hurt. I don't know if you can count on either one of them. So you're going to need some more pitching, and it's not in your organization. You don't have it.
So, Mike, good stuff.
You're at a legitimate crossroad for your future, and you've already lost 3 years of not being in postseason. And if you have a fourth, you got some real issues. Now, you know, what do? You fire the third base coach in Peoria? I mean, something like you got to do something more. And I don't really know what that is at this point because the confidence factor, not only of the fans, but of the players who have been in this organization, there's got to be an eyebrow raised on, you know, are we doing this the right way? And we only talk about a handful of guys, a Yachty, a Wong, and a DeYoung, and guys who have a future here, Goldschmidt, because everybody else is in play.
Mike, good stuff. We appreciate your time. Enjoy the game today. Are you going on the road to Oakland and L.A.?
Yes, and we'll see how things work. But I'll be on the road trip.
Sounds great. Mike, thank you, sir. In L.A.?
Do the
Bill McDermott and go to the Polo Club at the Beverly Hills Hotel.
How about in the Bay Area, though? Do you stay on the Oakland side or do you stay on the San Francisco side?
I will be in the San Francisco side, and I would expect the team to be over there, too. Let's just put it that way.
I wanted to clarify because that was my guess.
Yes.
Yeah, I think everybody – remember, Frank, when we were traveling with the Rams, we stayed in San Francisco. Let's just go over to Oakland and try and play a football game and get out of there safely. And I don't think anything's changed.
That's great. All right, sir, have a good one. Thank you, sir.
All right. You guys take care.
All right. Chris, grab this headset here. Chris Blair, the general manager at Worldwide Technology Raceway, joins us. Bomberito 500 coming up August 24th. And we have some Indy cars testing the track today a little bit. Tell me about it.
Yeah, today we have some of the up-and-coming rookies of the series that are here. Marcus Erickson, Felix Rosenquist, both raced in Formula One last year. They've made the transition over to IndyCar. Felix is definitely on a hot streak. He finished second to Scott Dixon this past weekend at Mid-Ohio, and just an absolutely incredible race. And everybody keeps saying this is the guy to watch, that once he figures these cars out, he could be a dominant player for many years to come. And then we also have Colton Herta here, who is an American driver. He won a race just a few days after his 19th birthday earlier this year at Circuit of the Americas in Texas. He's a second-generation racer. A lot of people are looking at him to the future also because McLaren, who is planning on doing a full-time entry into the IndyCar series, is talking about him being the driver that they're going to go after. So a lot of people are excited that if McLaren comes in and they team up with him, there's going to be a lot of potential there. And he's another driver that's being rumored that the Formula One teams over in Europe may be looking at him, trying to take him over there. So a lot of great things going on with these drivers that we have here today. This and all of them, basically IndyCar wants to try to get as much experience as possible for these young drivers on these oval tracks, especially with Rosenqvist and Ericsson, because they're primarily used to turning left and right, and to turn them loose on this track, they just want to make sure they're comfortable and get everything figured out, because the ovals are a little tricky for those guys because of the speeds of what they have going on. So today's going to be a very interesting test. We're going to start at 2 o'clock, so they'll be getting the heat of the day conditions, and it'll go until about 8 o'clock at night, so they can get the nighttime conditions also, or actually 10 o'clock at night. So that'll put it in exactly the same conditions they'll be in for race day when they're here in a few weeks. So it's going to be a very informative test. It'll let us see how the changes, you know, Firestone's working with some new tires. It's going to help us see what's going on with the tires and how the track's going to respond, and kind of get us all worked up and excited about what's coming up here in just a few weeks.
So is that Brian Herta's son?
Yes, it is.
That makes me feel really old. If Brian Herta's son is on the circuit right now, my goodness.
Yeah, it was funny. Earlier this year, the week of the Indy 500, I had dinner with Brian and his wife and some friends of ours, and you know, Colton is still living in the room at their house. I mean, the kid, you know, he's out hanging out with his buddies. He's plays in some kind of a punk rock band. He described it to me, and I don't know exactly what it is, but he's just your typical American kid, you know, who just on the weekends goes out and runs 230 miles an hour at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. But he's, you know, his mom and dad did a very good job of raising him, because he's one of the nicest kids you'll ever meet. And he's really coming into his own. He's going to be a star.
Give us a little idea about speeds we'll see here on the 24th, cost of these vehicles, and horsepower in some of these cars.
Yeah, it's the speeds are incredible. I mean, we're talking 210, 220 miles an hour down the straightaway. Cornering speeds that they're really not lifting, especially in our big turn down here, which is in the past, people had always kind of feathered a little bit going through one and two. These guys are trying to figure out how they can go flat out around the racetrack. So,
the corner at 210?
Yes. So, you know, there's a lot of that going on. As far as the horsepower goes, currently they're in around the 750 range, but just as I walked in the room here, I got an update from IndyCar of a press release they've put out, that in 2022, they're going to be going to a hybrid engine system, which is a pretty big step from them, because right now they're traditional, you know, gasoline, you know, or not gasoline, but methanol combustion engines. They're going to be moving into a hybrid system that'll have a push-to-pass thing, a lot more technology involved. They're trying to do this to get more manufacturers into the sport, and they're talking about a horsepower range of around 900 horsepower in these cars. So, well, as I was saying, it's going to be like watching the cars that we're seeing now running fast forward, because the whole thing is going to be how they get the power to the ground, but it should be pretty interesting. And, you know, we're looking at cars that you know, in the price tag, probably around $750,000 to $1 million. It depends on the technology that they put into it. And as I always tell everybody, the most expensive piece on the car is the steering wheel. The steering wheel is around $150,000, $200,000, because it has all these controls, and it basically your car is run by the steering wheel. So there's a lot of interesting things that are going on with these vehicles. It's super high tech. Jay Fry, who's the president of IndyCar, he's trying to do as much as he can to get a lot of the European manufacturers, such as the McLarens, the BMWs, Porsches, trying to get them into the sport. And a lot of those European groups, they're wanting to see more hybrid technology. So this is a big step, and I think it's going to be good for the sport.
So the Bomarito Automotive 500 has been a big hit the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. I assume on your end, each year, though, you learn a little something. What do you change? And give us an idea this year what you've tweaked from the last two.
Well, one of the things, and Frank's pretty much knows about this, because I've been sharing a lot of our customer surveys. We do a very thorough, solid customer survey after each event. Larry Albus and the team over at Maryville University do this for us. And we've been getting a 92% rating the last 2 years, which, you know, I wish I would have got a 92 in classes when I was in college, you know. But, you know, we're getting some good grades. But we always find little things. Like a couple years after the first year, people wanted to see vintage cars, so we added vintage cars. This year, they wanted to see a little more action. You know, they want to see some bigger fields, because the Indy Lights program, they're growing. They only have about 12 or 13 entries. The fans wanted to see some bigger classes racing. So we've added the NASCAR K&N series into this year's event. And last year they ran on Friday. This year we're actually going to do them on Saturday. So on Saturday you're going to get four complete races plus the exhibition of the vintage cars. And, I mean, it's a full day of activity. So that's one of the things that to entice the people to come down from Indianapolis and from Chicago and the outlying markets, we wanted to give them a full day's experience instead of just coming in and sitting down for 3 hours and then going home. We wanted to give them something special, so it's worked.
What type of impact will worldwide technology have specifically for fans coming here on the 24th? Or is it too soon, or will there be immediate impact?
It's not really an immediate impact yet. So what I can share with you is a few weeks ago, I was part of a team of eight people that included some of the key developers from Worldwide Technology. Dave Stewart has put together a team that he wants to see what we can do to elevate motorsports. He wants to see what Worldwide Technology can do to engage more of the fan experience and what they can do with some of their vendors and the different groups that they work with. So this first event, August 24th, is the first one, the first IndyCar race under the Worldwide banner, where we're going to have a lot of people from Worldwide here taking a look at everything, trying to figure out how they would view making the event better. We are working on some things. We've got a few programs that were in place, and we've got a deadline we're trying to meet to make things better. Dave's got some surprises for us. A lot of the things that Dave wants to do, Mr. Stewart, is he's going to add a little more to our show. We've got some guests coming in that are going to be part of the pre-race and the post-race. He's going to be bringing a lot of influential people here to show him the racetrack that we think could be a big stepping stone for us in the future. And, you know, we're really excited to work with him. He's a fantastic individual, and he loves racing. And the great thing is the team that he assembled. You know, I expected to go to Daytona with a bunch of tech guys and would have to explain everything to them. These guys are all car guys who are also in the tech side of things, and they knew as much about what was going on at the racetrack as I did, so they were excited. So, you know, when I came back from, I called Curtis while I was there, and I said, you're not going to believe this, but we've got a lot of tech guys that love racing. This is going to be a perfect group, and so far it's worked out very well. They've got a lot of great ideas, and I think we're going to see some great things to come.
Is NASCAR still the pie in the sky? Do you table that discussion, or does that get kicked around every once in a while?
Behind the scenes, every day when I wake up, my goal is to get St. Louis a NASCAR Cup race. Every day when I get out of bed, I say, what can I do to do that? You know, Curtis is on the same mission. We're trying. You know, there's a lot of things, you know, there's a lot of decisions that need to be made in the weeks ahead. One of the things they look at is how does St. Louis support the events that they currently have? And, you know, I'll be honest with you, the Blues winning the Cup was a huge bonus for us because Steve Phelps, the president of NASCAR, came to game six of the Western Conference Finals, and he got the full treatment. Mr. Stewart introduced him to a lot of key people here in town. Mayor Crewson actually went down and sat on the glass with him, you know, during the game. You know, it's tremendous, and Steve is a hockey fan. He loved it, and unfortunately, he was a Boston fan, so he didn't come back for the finals.
Well, he went to the right game then.
He went to the right
That's
game,
right.
But he had a great experience, and he saw this is what St. Louis can do, and he saw the effort that with the Cardinals, and naturally, you watch a Cardinals game, it's incredible. He's noticing what's going on with the MLS campaign and seeing that, you know. And we hope the MLS comes to town just as much as anybody, because the more we can show our city in a positive light, it's going to help our cause. Us getting NASCAR is going to be good for the city. Us getting soccer is going to be good for the city. So we're just trying to build from that momentum, and all of us work together to try to elevate what we're doing here. We're a great sports town, and as I like to say, I want us to be not only known for pucks and balls, but also for tires, too, and show that we can bring some more in here.
Pucks, balls, and tires. And how often do you and Frank talk about Kentucky basketball? Does that come up? Or
here's what I've done. For my health, I've decided I'm backing off on Kentucky basketball. I love it, but I noticed every time I watched a game this year, my blood pressure would go up, and I've got too many.
Typical Kentucky fan. If they win 30, but they don't win the national championship, I'm upset.
We only got to the Elite Eight, or we've only got five All-Americans this year, McDonald's.
Yeah, well, you know, coming from Kentucky, we've never been able to talk about football, so it's always basketball year-round. And I tell you, you're right, Frank. I was home this past weekend to visit my mom. And
what's your hometown again?
My hometown is Jeremiah, Kentucky, near Whitesburg. I grew up 20 miles from the Virginia border. So I always used to say I was so far back in the woods that we got Monday Night Football on Thursday. It was that far back in there.
But you were the home of Thursday Night Football before you knew it,
exactly.
Right?
John Pelfrey, kind of close to that area.
Yeah, John, he was about 30 miles away from me.
Yep.
And Richie Farmer was about 30 miles the other direction. So,
Back in that group. Legendary Richie Farmer.
Yeah.
To buy tickets
for the 24th, what's the easiest way?
The easiest way is wwtraceway.com, or they can call our ticket office, 618-215-8888. Ask for Taylor. She's there all the time. She's our customer service king and her queen, and she's doing a great job of that. And if there's some fans out there, you know, technically this is a closed test today, but if you were to go to the Gateway Cartplex, which is located on the infield, you can stand on the porch and you'd be able to watch some cars go around the track. So feel free to come out if you're a fan. Come out if you're if you've never experienced an IndyCar, you just want to see what it's all about. Cruise on out here and check it out.
How much do one of those tires cost right there, right outside?
Well, here's the interesting thing. They lease the tires. So the teams have to lease those tires from Firestone because Firestone doesn't want anybody to have control of one of their tires after it leaves here.
Wow.
And so to be honest with you, I don't even know what the deal is because I was just trying to get some of those Firestone tires for our track prep process. And Firestone's is like an act of Congress. I got to sign disclosure agreements and everything else.
But would look good on one of Martin's expensive cars, those big tires.
Backup camera.
That's right.
Yeah, by the way, Frank is threatening while they're testing to get the News Channel 5 vehicle out there and whip around.
Yeah.
Hey, little Ford Escape.
I don't mind if I screw up my tires. All right, good stuff, Chris. We appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
Thank you guys for being here. It's great to have you here for a test. Hopefully we get some great information that you can take back.
All right, we'll take a break. Before we go to break, quick word about the Gatesworth Finest in Senior Living. Looking for a place for mom or dad, aunt or uncle, grandma or grandpa, 170 in Delmar, 1 McKnight Place. The answer is always yes when you call down to the front desk, the Gatesworth, the finest in senior living. We'll take a short time out. More with John Mozeliak and Michael Gersh in our 11 o'clock hour of broadcasting live from Worldwide Technology Raceway. We'll be right back.